Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Wednesday, May 28th, 2014. And for the first segment today, we will have Wendy Wilson joining us from the Apothecary Herbs. But first, let's get to the market report. Oh, hi, Al.
Hello, Melody.
I don't want to forget you, Al. But good afternoon, Al.
Good afternoon.
And gold today, there wasn't anything good about gold today. It was down another 470 today on the markets, down 1259 or standing at 1259, but off its low for the day. Silver still holding at $19.13. Platinum was down $12 today at $1,459, and palladium continues its trend up $3, $840. You also have the USDX, of course, is trading stronger, 0.20 at 80.56, and a big pullback in crude oil today, down 1.26 at 102.85. And the paper markets today, the S&P continues to touch on highs, but it didn't keep it for the day. You had the Dow down 42 points at 16,633. The NASDAQ was down 11 points at 42.25, along with the S&P, down to at 19.09. And the 10-year yield today, it was down big, 2.44%. 2.44% down 0.08. And there's a couple of things we'll be talking about after the first break on the markets, but let's see if Wendy Wilson is there to join us.
Hello, Melody. How are you?
Just fantastic, Wendy.
And I guess Al's there too, right?
Yes, he
is. Good guess.
Oh, yay. Well, next week I have an appointment, so I won't be able to be with you on Wednesday. So perhaps maybe we could do another day.
That's fine.
All righty. Well, I thought today we would talk about this new report from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. It was published back in 2003, but it has some very interesting information to reveal on trends and how these trends have actually came to play into your current healthcare industry. But I don't know, you probably know this, Al. Did you know prior to World War II, most of the hospitals were private, and they were started by, do you know what institution?
Probably the Catholic Church. I wouldn't be surprised. Is that true or
Most false? Of them. Most of them were church founded. This is correct. Uh-huh. So the church was doing what it's supposed to do, you know, help take care of the sick, the people in need. But around World War II and shortly after, state legislators began to take over the health care. So states began to move the care from the sick of the sick from the private sector and control to the control of the government. So actually, the Affordable Care Act, when you look at all this, how it's been staged in steps, the Affordable Care Act is really the climax of the U.S. government taking over health care. This new era in health care is really going to become this global standardized financial system of assessing human commodities, okay? So an example would be right here in the state of North Carolina. Back in 1943, the political and business leaders of the state saw an opportunity to assist the struggling hospitals, which were started by local churches. So newspaper clippings report that these there were some powerful and influential leaders in the community, but they were still concerned about the political influence with regards to health care. So what do you think they did, Al? Take a guess.
Well, I don't know.
They hired attorneys.
Oh, there's where they went wrong.
Right. So they hired attorneys to oversee this through legislation, and what it did is it allowed the political takeover of the church-run facilities. So, and it's just an interesting thing. We've got a big major hospital here that was taken over during those years, and it's one of the largest. It's in the top 3% of the hospitals nationwide. It's called Carolina's Healthcare. And it used to be called a different name, but they had this big makeover, and they had modernized their logo. And their logo is this tree, and the tree, they say, is the tree of life. So they're using a biblical image to project the 9 branches of this tree, supposedly to represent courage and wisdom and kindness and so forth and so on. But, you know, I used to work for that hospital industry for a few years back in the 80s and early 90s. And, you know, what they do is wealthy physicians and their family members that would have surgery, they wrote off the bill, whereas people on fixed income and retired folks, they were harassed until they paid every penny of their bill. So I don't think that tree is a really good fit for this hospital, but that's just my personal opinion.
No, but I understand. And they've changed medicine from something I can remember in the early, back in the 50s.
Yeah.
Doctors came to your home.
Yeah.
I remember clearly every winter my sister and I'd get a dose of tonsillitis, one or the other, and Dr. Gladstone would drive all the way from McHenry to Crystal Lake back in Illinois in order to treat us at home.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
I know.
I don't doubt that part of the consequences of the new government government assuming control of healthcare business is mm-hmm. increased income for doctors.
Yes, it has. Well, let me just get back to this, the report, though, from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services that was published in 2003. The title of the report was Prevention Makes Common Sense, and they spelled sense, C-E-N-T-S. So the report actually covered the obesity epidemic statistics in the United States and the diseases that obesity can lead to, apparently 28 major diseases. And it also covered the mortality rates, tends to shorten the lifespan by about 20 years, and how much obesity costs the government. They said back then $69 to $117 billion a year obesity costs the U.S. government. So they concluded, this report concluded that overweight people have a lower net worth. So the overall message is overweight people.
Terrorists. I think they should be defined as terrorists for being overweight.
Yeah. Well, they say the overall message is overweight people cost the government more and they're worth less as a commodity. Smokers face the same similar assessment in this report. So this is where this lifestyle crackdown from the government's been coming, you know, through the years, motivating a healthier lifestyle to shape even, you know, corporate America. They've been dumping a lot of programs into a corporate America and a lot of money to improve everyone's lifestyle. But the problem with that is, you know, you can apply pressure to workers through, you know, job assessments and wage increases, so they hit the gym and they trim down. But, you know, that's not a long-term fix, because lifestyle is not to be treated like a dress code. Lifestyle is social, personal, emotional, and even religious. So you can't really dictate lifestyle. People have to want to change. Am I not right about that, Al?
Well, they have to want to change. I get, yeah, that's true, if they want to change. But what the government's talking about, they are saying, we're going to control your lifestyle in the name of maintaining your health. That's what they're finally talking about. And I'm curious whether their lifestyle changes will include removing pesticides and GMO products from our diet. And what about taking fluoride out of the drinking water?
Well, you're hitting on something there.
Where it affects corporate profits, or will it only be a matter of, we're going to control people. If you're overweight, we're going to get you out and make you do jumping jacks.
Well, and you're absolutely right there on hitting that, because, you know, there's been research that says, you know, vaccines create diabetes. And and a lot of the drugs and stuff like antibiotics create obesity. You know, so there's been scientific evidence that links a lot of what they mandate us to do to comply, you know, to get back to work sooner, you know, not be out sick too long, to, you know, get into school, you got to have all these vaccinations. You know, it's kind of like a catch-22.
It's a lot like the Hegelian principle, where you create the problem and then you come in as if to solve the problem. The government is making us sick to some considerable degree, and then they want to impose additional regulations on us to get healthy.
I agree with that. And this Carolina healthcare system, this big hospital system here that has the Tree of Life symbol, you know, I got something from them in the mail the other day, and this was amusing to me to a certain degree. It was basically a brochure, you know, to get you healthy. And on the front were pictures of fruit and herbs, Al. The brochure was soliciting folks to contact them to sign up for their wellness plan that would also offer them a free recipe book. There was a picture of a young female doctor asking folks to eat fruits and vegetables to fight off disease. Now, I don't disagree with that, to eat better and empower your body to, you know, heal itself. But I think this is really rich. You know, from a system that makes you sick, promotes it under a veil of health. And, you know, after they inject us with vaccines and pump us through the antibiotics and you know, so forth and so on, they want to help design us a healthier diet. I think that's real rich.
Well, you know, I'm sure you've heard me talk about this, being sued by the Attorney General of Texas for $25,000 a day for my involvement in a corporation that was selling, manufacturing and distributing colloidal silver. All right, that's $9 million a year personally threatened by these people. And in the process of defending against that suit, I read the relevant law and realized that the definitions of food found at Title 21, Section 321, and the definitions of drugs and the definition of medical devices all presume the people to be animals.
Yep. Yeah.
They are absolutely treating us. We've talked about it for years. We joke about it as if we were animals on the global plantation. No, that's what's happening. That's not a metaphor. That's exactly how they see us. They do not, and it's consistent with you talking about human commodities.
Yeah.
That's how they see us, and it's completely contrary to fundamental principles this country began on. It's contrary to any notion of freedom or liberty, rights. You don't have any more rights in the final analysis than a chicken on a Tyson poultry processing plant. All right? That's the measure of our rights. And the only thing that distinguishes us from those chickens is the fact that we still have firearms. And if they ever get rid of those, then watch and see how much medical care we're going to get from Obamacare and government telling us whether we're too fat, too old, too whatever.
Absolutely. Well, if we have a few minutes, I can shift gears and talk about this canine distemper virus.
We got about 4 minutes.
Okay. Well, this is an interesting thing. Actually, a listener brought this to my attention. Very bizarre situation in which cats are showing up with canine distemper virus. And I'm not just talking about, you know, house cats. I'm talking about big cats. I'm talking about lions, tigers, leopards, and not just the ones that are in captivity. The ones that are also in the wild are showing up with this very odd, you know, a dog flu bug, basically. So research seems to indicate that the canine distemper virus originated from raccoons and ferrets, and dogs got bit by them. And then it was originally discovered in 1905 when dogs came down with it. So, but here's an interesting quote from a Claire Sharp. She's the assistant professor of clinical science at Tufts University School of Veterinary Medicine. She says they have no understanding what's going on here. And they've been trying to give the cats in captivity at some, like at the Texas Exotic Cat Refuge, they've been trying to give the cats there ferret distemper, that version of the vaccine, and some other drugs to protect the big cats from the canine distemper, but they're guessing. They're just hoping, and they're guessing.
Maybe they could run some clinical trials on people in order to know what how better to treat the cats, because odds are the cats in the zoo are worth more than the people.
Well, you know, there's a couple of scenarios and how these big cats are coming down with this distemper. And one is the canine distemper was grown on feline tissue. Okay. And the other issue was,
you know, what do you mean by that? You mean it was grown in a laboratory on feline tissue. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. So the canine distemper was grown on a different tissue, not even the same species. So it'll jump the gap, see? So it'll jump the gap over
so
to the cat.
So some genius in the laboratory is perhaps responsible for letting this grow jump the gap. How long before we get canine distemper?
Yeah. Well, and an interesting thing is there's a, I don't have time to go into it, but they also had some blood analysis done over in Zambia. And the ecosystems there, they were analyzing blood from 2009 to 2011. The big cats had the serum antigen for rabies, and that can only be when they seeded the wild with rabies packets. So I'm thinking since then they could have added the canine distemper for the coyotes and the other dog-like species, thinking the cats wouldn't get it. You know, but then when they came in contact with the rabies packets, they got it too. So there's all kinds of scenarios, but we all have to say in the end, it's because man's been tinkering with nature.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Every time we think we're so smart, we can mess with Mother Nature, essentially.
Absolutely.
Generally speaking, that's a bad idea. Usually it doesn't work out.
It doesn't. Mm-mm. That's God's copyright. Don't try to rewrite that.
Well, Wendy, thank you for being on the program. We're about out of time. Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com. And give
sure,
us a little more contact information. And
yeah, they could give us a call for a free product catalog. We'll be happy to send it. It's 866-229-3663, 866-229-3663, or thepowerherbs.com. And you all be well. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Wendy. Talk
bye-bye.
To you in the next whenever we your appointments and our programs work out. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
A heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family. American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with Melody Cedarstrom. Program's brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
Well, I just want to touch briefly a little bit on the gold prices. We saw gold drop significantly yesterday. We saw it drop a little bit today, a little over $4 today with a follow-through type selling from yesterday's. It did break some technical support levels. And what's kind of odd, other than the dollar getting a little bit stronger, there wasn't any fundamental news that took gold through, you know, these levels. Again, they're just hitting gold to keep gold. They can't have the high stock market prices with high gold prices. And so you're seeing support levels. It broke through the 1260 and 1258. And, you know, I read information about a lot of this selling from yesterday and today could be from frustrated long position holders, you know, hoping to find gold go higher. You've had so much geopolitical news coming in from various parts of the world, and yet you see oil doing a little bit better than gold, and people are getting frustrated with the price of gold because that they're betting on the price of gold. They're really not betting on the fundamentals of gold and silver. So I think you have this, the next target date, or the next target for gold is 1250. That's a pretty important number. We'll see if it holds there. And then you might see 1220 if it doesn't. But we've broken through 1220 several times in the past year, hitting 1195 only for it to bounce back and to go up to 13 and a little bit over. We're heading into summer. So, but there's a couple of things going on this summer. Of course, you have that bill that's being passed July 1st, although I don't believe that bill will have anything to do with the collapse of the dollar that day. I could put some pressure on the paper markets. I think it would put pressure on the paper markets and perhaps the beginning decline of continued decline of confidence in the U.S. dollar. And then we also have August 14th, we have the silver, the London fix. We're going to see some changes. We don't know if those changes are certainly some changes. We don't know if the Deutsche Bank is going to be replaced by another bank, or what's going to happen, or if they will completely stop the London fix on silver. So a lot of interesting things that are happening this summer, and I think everything that we see in the prices of these gold and silver, they're great opportunities. We certainly see huge numbers in the selling of silver eagles, and I only bring that particular product out because anybody can go online and check those numbers. We did so far pass last month numbers with the silver eagles, so we'll have to see how the month finishes out. So, again, it's discouraging now to see the numbers get hit, but yet, on the positive note, they're great buying opportunities. The fundamentals haven't changed. You have the stock markets that are hitting all-time highs. That doesn't help the price of gold. But we also know when you have markets that are hitting all-time highs, what happens shortly thereafter? We talked about the markets being overbought yesterday, compared to where they were 2007.
Well, you know, we've talked about it a bunch of times. You buy low and you sell high. And the reason you sell high is because when it gets high, it's probably going to go down. Well, they're setting records in the stock market, and signal, you know, historically, that's a signal that we are probably seeing a peak. We are probably going to head down. Although it's not necessarily true that we're going to head down. The market's going to head down in the next 6 weeks or 6 months. I don't know when it's going to happen. But historically, you buy low and you sell high. Right now, gold is low and the markets are high. The implication is obvious. You have to do that if you're going to generate profits. Buy low, sell high. You talk about, some people are discouraged by the price of gold falling, and that's true for anyone who has acquired gold and you already have savings in gold. Your savings have diminished in the last year or so, right? In terms of dollars, they've diminished based on the falling price of gold. But if you are in a mode to acquire gold, this is just cause for celebration. I've said it for, I've said it for 6 months or so on the program, but I've said it previously. All it means when prices go down is more for me. Mm-hmm. That's all it means. And the reason that's important is because I remain convinced that fundamental problems are here that will ultimately push the price of gold dramatically higher. Number one, we have a fiat currency. The dollar is a fiat currency. All fiat currencies fail. They have done so throughout time. It's not a new phenomenon. There's a handful of fiat currencies that exist right now besides the dollar, but there have been something like 275 throughout recorded history, and about 260 of them have already gone the way of the ghost. They're gone. They don't work anymore. It will inevitably happen that the dollar will become worthless. And a lot of people sit back and they'll say, oh, that's crazy talk, that's radical. No, it's not. The dollar has already lost 95% of its value just in the last 40 years or so. We're down to where a dollar back when I was a kid is only worth a nickel today. It doesn't take a lot of intelligence to see that the day is coming when it's only worth 4 cents, and then 3 cents, and then 2 cents, and then 1 cent, and finally 0 cents. We've already eliminated 95 cents out of the purchasing power of the dollar. It doesn't take a genius to predict we're going to lose the 5th cent, the 4th, and the 3rd, and the 2nd, and finally that, the last, and we'll have a dollar worth zero. What happens then? And what will be the price of gold then? And where will you store your wealth? If you've stored your wealth in a bank or a 401k or Social Security or any paper debt instrument, when the dollar ceases to have value, where will your wealth be? And it's going to be hard to come by. It's going to be hard to find unless you have it stored in terms of gold. So I look at, for me, purchasing gold is not in and of itself the thing, all right? For me, what motivates me, first, dollar is doomed. All right? But I can't tell you when it's going to crash. I can't say when it's going to be devalued in a reset or perhaps crash and become worth zero. I can't tell you that. I don't know. There are a lot of people who think that time is close. All right, maybe not this year, but within, you can see the onset of it before the end of this year, and could happen much quicker than that. You see the beginning. It won't happen, more than likely, it won't happen like flipping a light switch. But once it gets rolling, you'll be able to see it more clearly. When people finally do see this with some clarity, they will panic. They will do whatever they can to get away from paper dollars and paper debt instruments. And in the midst of that panic, those prices will fall dramatically, and the price of tangible forms of wealth like gold or land, they're going to go up, up, and up. We can expect that. Dollars going down. What's the other point? The other point is the debt. The national debt is too enormous to ever be paid in full. It can't be paid. This is one of the reasons why the dollar is only worth a nickel today compared to what it was when I was a little boy. It's because government wants to pay off its bills with cheaper dollars. It's not an accident. It is policy that they will take the dollar down and down and down and down again. It's in order to rob government creditors, but to rob them slowly. Or they don't exactly catch on to where they don't, or they don't mind being robbed at least a little bit by the government. But the day is coming when we're going to face up to the fact that the debt is so large it can't ever be repaid. And if it can't be repaid, it means all of the correlative debt instruments, like United States Treasuries, for example, and even stocks and 401ks and bank accounts, they're going to zero out or very come close to it. I think my guess is that we aren't going to be able to pay more than 10 to 20% of the existing debt. And that implies, for me, that implies that 80% of the paper debt instruments are going to turn out to be worthless, or on average, the average paper debt instrument will lose 80, maybe 90% of its perceived value. That's what I'm anticipating. I could be mistaken. Maybe they only lose 50%. But when that time rolls around, and it is inevitable, it's going to happen, but I can't tell you when. When that time rolls around, those people who've stored their money in a form of paper are going to lose their assets. They are going to suffer an enormous and painful loss. Those people who've stored their wealth in the form of gold are going to say, yippee. I can now get out and buy myself a home, brand new home, for a couple ounces of gold.
And the couple, just to remind the listeners how long gold lasts, the California couple that found the buried gold while they were out walking their dog last year, their coins came up for sale last night. The first one was done in the San Francisco Mint. And it was scheduled to go for like $4,500, and it was sold for $15,000. And the balance of those coins will be sold on eBay, and they will, I guess, begin today. So they're donating some of the money so the San Francisco Mint can be rebuilt or gussied up or whatever you might want to call it, the museum. And they're donating some coins there to help that to be completed. And it'll be interesting to see what they finally get sold for, the very final tally. There's nearly 1,400 coins that will be up for auction. So that started yesterday and today. And
Well, good for them.
Good for them.
Yeah, I know.
I'm going to go out and walk Ruby right now, so finish the program. I'm going to go look for some gold coins.
Yeah, I know. But, take a walk around. Fire the dog. If the dog doesn't turn up any gold, you're fired. Yeah. No, Ruby, that's it. That's it. Ruby. You want to eat, you find some gold. Understand?
But You know, we haven't talked much about, here's a quick update on the Obamacare. They say that 8 million people have signed up for the Affordable Care Act, and everyone, and well, he is claiming victory, but there's some things that say not so much. There was a study released today by the American College of Emergency Physicians found that emergency room visits are up nationwide. But yet when they were promoting this great health care, they promised that the emergency room visits would actually drop. But you're not going to hear that on any major network newscast. There's also been some recent...
Do you know why they're rising in the emergency room?
I would think because...
Because the hospital has to treat you even if you don't have insurance.
Well, they always did.
I get that, but in theory, if Obamacare is working and people are getting insurance who didn't have insurance, they don't need to go to the emergency room anymore.
Yeah.
It's the fact that it's rising indicates that this hasn't been much of a success. And from my understanding, you know, my understanding is there's about 310 million people in this country. And if only 8 million have so far signed up for Obamacare, that means there's another 300 million who have not yet signed up.
Well,
now, I'm looking at those numbers, and my reaction is, you know, this does not sound. We're talking about in theory, Obamacare is going to include everyone. And so far, all they've signed up is maybe 2.5%. of the population to say victory is ours. I don't think that's quite right. I think you got to go a ways before you can claim victory if you've only got 2.5% of the population signed up for Obamacare. I'm not sure about how all the numbers work on this, but regardless, you see my point. 8 million signups?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that what you told me?
That's what they're claiming.
Claiming. 2.5% of the population.
Yeah. There was a recent revelation about the Obamacare about data processing employees who were so underworked that they slept and they played board games in the office.
It sounds like Dilbert. You know, Dilbert has absolutely come to life. It's not just a cartoon. It's an accurate assessment of what goes on in corporate America and governmental America and the rest of it. It's just a big fraud. You know, one of these days we're going to have to do some sort of a study and find out how many people actually work in this country. Because one way or another, they're supporting all the rest. And it may be down where there's only a dozen or 20 people that have real jobs. Everybody else is just, you know, putting in their time, getting their paycheck, but not producing anything.
It gets better, Al. Here's this company, Serco, the British-based company. We can't even hire Americans. They have to get a British-based company, was awarded the $1.25 billion contract to process the Obamacare applications. And I was told a long time ago by a British doctor that, of course, this is where Obama really came from. It's pretty much just a duplication of the European or Europe-Britain's health care. And he says that is just a disaster. But so again, you have people just sitting around, and you have people, over 1,000 people, that are employed by the British-based company. We also have the website.
Well, here's another point. Correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't it true that Obama has talked about having some sort of an unemployment problem in this country?
Mm-hmm.
Why are we hiring a British firm? Are we employing... Who are the workers for this British firm? Are they Americans or are they Britons?
Just says that 1,000 people are employed by Serco, the British-based company.
Well, in any
regardless,
case, it's just shameful.
Profits are
shameful, I don't
British.
Care. The profits at least are going to Great Britain. And profits on what? Another racketeering adventure where we hold a job together and 1,000 people aren't even working, but they get paid anyway, and somebody makes a profit off of this, and the taxpayers are paying for it, and government is allegedly managing it, and we're going to take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Adask here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Folks, I'm Alfred Adesk here with Melody Cederstrom, Financial Survival. We were talking about Obamacare when we broke for some commercials, and during the commercial break, Melody's telling me that she knows someone.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us, Melody.
Someone told me that both her and her husband, they didn't have health insurance, and they were not going to sign up for Obamacare because they couldn't afford the insurance. They couldn't even afford the $95 fine that they were going to have placed on them. But with talking with some people and helping them sign the right paperwork, their insurance is only costing them $1.56 a month.
For what? Per month. $1.56
per month.
A month.
$1.56
All right, that's probably about $30.
Month.
I'm not sure if that's $30 a year, but thereabouts.
Mm-hmm.
All right. It sounds like such a deal. Who would object to getting health care for $1.56 a month? Get two people for health care for $1.56 a month. It's an extraordinary deal. Yeah. But somebody's paying for that. It's like Melody and I going out and having dinner, and we each have a nice, reasonably expensive dinner. And by the time we get done, we have a $100 meal, and we only pay $2 for the meal. Well, who's paying the balance of that meal? Someone is. Someone's paying. All right? These people are getting some deal for $1.56 a month. You know, assuming that number and the story are exactly correct and the rest of that, someone is still paying for the health care. And it's going to be the chumps. All right? The American chump, otherwise known as taxpayers. You taxpayer, you're the one who's going to pay for Obamacare. They've already talked about what were the subsidies for insurance companies. If it turns out that Obamacare was costing the insurance companies some money, the government is going to subsidize the insurance companies.
Mm-hmm.
Where does the government get the money to subsidize the insurance companies? The answer is from the American chump. Again, the taxpayer, the dummy who's out there working for a living, making a productive contribution to society and being taxed into oblivion. so we can support corporations, insurance companies, and individuals who think they are entitled to predate on the productive elements of society. And it gets covered up with, oh, we're giving health care, we're providing free health care. Well, how about providing free food and maybe free cars and free houses? And none of us will have to work. It'll all be free. We'll just have an endless supply of free lunches. There are no free lunches. Somebody's paying for lunch. It might not be you. It might not be me. But somebody's paying for lunch. And it must be someone who actually, ultimately, it has to be someone who actually produced something. And if we keep feeding on our productive members of society, and I'm not talking about the spectacularly rich. I'm talking mainly on the middle class. We keep feeding on them, keep predating on them, they're going to disappear. And then what? Who is going to provide the free lunch? I guarantee the people out there who aren't working and are getting the free lunch, yay, yay, we're having a free lunch. That sounds great. We're going to have free lunch tomorrow and dinner and breakfast, and it's all going to be free because we're entitled to free. The truth is, none of us are entitled to one dime that we haven't personally earned. And every time government comes around with some story about entitlement, they are lying. You're not entitled to a nickel you haven't personally earned. And if you get money you haven't personally earned, you'd better be thankful for it. Because some poor sap is doing without so you can do with.
Well, here's just to add to those dollars. What about the websites? The enrollment so far is going to be ready for the second round at a cost of $121 million. You have all these state-run exchanges that are just running through, burning through tax dollars as well. Oregon being the most or the largest failure, it recently decided to junk its $300 million website after failing to sign up a single person online. You have other states. You have Maryland, Massachusetts, Nevada. They all have the same problem. State exchanges have cost the public almost $4.2 billion to build, and it's going to cost more to fix them. You know, and you're right, Al. It's not a state. It's not a federal. It doesn't matter. It's this taxpayers' problem. And, you know, the cost, I mean, they don't even know who's actually paid their first month's premium.
You know what else you're talking about here? If they've signed up 8 million people for Obamacare and the states have lost $4 billion on the websites, that means they're losing $500 a person. Huh? That's essentially what it's cost to sign up the 800 or the 8 million. And there may be other costs besides that, but I mean,
I'm sure there is. You'd think.
I mean, this is nuts. This is nuts. By the time you get done with it, the real cost of the 8 million that signed up on the, however many signed up on the internet, it could be $1,000 a person to sign up on the internet.
I mean, they don't know how many signups have actually paid their first month's premiums. There's surveys that range anywhere from 67% to 95%, and I've seen numbers a lot lower than that. And this information might have been available, but Harry Reid blocked the House-approved Exchange Information Disclosure Act, which would have increased transparency in the affordable health care insurance exchange. So they don't even want this information.
No, I understand.
You know, so again, what are they hiding? There's a lot of questions. There's no answers. The high cost, that is the young and the healthy. I mean, they're not signing up for it to pay. They're the ones that were supposed to pay for the system. But what is interesting is,
and despite public education, they apparently have enough brains to understand this is not a good idea.
Yeah.
Huh? You know, Rand Institute did two studies back in the 1990s on how much money that is sent to government for a particular beneficiary. They would collect money and say, we have to have $1 billion for women. We got to have $1 billion for blacks. We got to have $1 billion for the children. Okay, this is government makes that pitch. We've got to help these people. How much money reached the intended beneficiaries? And according to the Rand Institute, the first study was 25 cents on the dollar. Government and government approved middlemen consumed 75% of the money that was raised for blacks, for women, for children, for any other minority group, whatever. So we've got to raise taxes to help these poor people. The truth of the matter is, if we did the charity ourselves, and this touches on Wendy's topic earlier in the program, when she said the hospitals used to be run primarily by churches. And under those circumstances, there was an element of charity in providing medical care. And medical care was relatively inexpensive. When the government got in and said, you people in churches, you don't need to provide the charity. We, the government, will provide the charity. Only we, the government, and government-approved middlemen will take 75% of what we collect in apparent charity to help the poor. And we'll keep 75% for ourselves, and we'll give 25% to the intended beneficiaries. Rand Institute did the same study a couple of years later, and they calculated that it had fallen to 20% out of every dollar they collected, supposedly to help the poor, the blacks, whoever. Only 20 cents reached the intended beneficiary. Government and government-approved middlemen consumed 80% of the money. And the point is, what makes anyone suppose that we're going to see something different in relationship to Obamacare? Before this is all done, the only people that are going to be well taken care of by Obamacare are the administrators and the corporations and the insurance companies. When government gets involved in a particular program, guess what? It goes to HELC. All right? Not heck, not hell, HELC. So in any case, it's just, this is part of the reason Harry Reid doesn't want people to look into this. He doesn't want people to understand. He doesn't want people to see the evidence that common sense, if you have any common sense, tells you. You already know. It's another boondoggle. That's what it's going to be. And they say, all of us are sitting back and to some extent saying, maybe not. Maybe this time government will give us a fair deal. Because, boy, we'd sure like to have less expensive health care, wouldn't we?
Well,
we are tempted by that nonsense. We fall for it time after time after time. And it doesn't work out.
As more and more people figure out how they can get a free ride on this health insurance, I mean, you have the young people, they're healthy. They don't have to sign up for it. Why? They can save thousands of dollars a year in premiums. Then if they do get sick, if they are diagnosed with a serious illness like cancer, they could just go and enroll for coverage, pay the same premiums that healthy people pay, and the market will collapse. So you're going to have more and more people signing up only when they need it, All the costs that are involved, and the Obamacare, it creates so many incentives for the free ride, and it's just a matter of time until the insurance markets would collapse. But when you really think about it, isn't that what they really need to have happen if they want to implement the single-payer system? And you know that's what they've wanted. I mean, even Hillary was trying to get it done. I mean, they've been wanting it for a very long time.
Yeah, they're creating a system right now that isn't going to work. They know it's not going to work.
Then
they are going to come up and say, wait, we have a new and improved plan that'll be even better than Obamacare. The government will pay all your health care costs. And what does that mean? It means that you're going to stand in line for 30 days to 60 days to get any health care. And if you have a heart attack or a stroke and you need care right now, well, you better start praying. You better be right with God, because there's a good chance that by the time you fill out all the paperwork before you can get into the hospital, you're going to be dead.
And let's just take a look at the vets, the Veterans Administration. I mean, they've had problems for a really long time. And this is an election year, so I know it's even brought to the forefront, which is a good thing. But if they can't handle, if government can't handle the Veterans Administration and providing health care to the vets in a timely manner, how do you think this system to the public
it's the same
is
thing.
Going to work?
Do you
it's
think
the same
that's,
thing.
That's exactly right. What it comes down to. How many of you actually believe that once you get signed up for Obamacare, your medical care will be any better than they're providing to veterans in this country right now? I mean, if anything, they have an obligation to veterans that's greater than the obligation to the ordinary American. You would at least think that. And as a practical matter, the only thing they do is they look at veterans and they figure, these people are costing us a lot of money. I wish somebody would get rid of them for us. And if they leave them sit without medical care long enough, guess what? God will get rid of the veterans on behalf of the government. And the government say, this is great. The veterans are dying, and now we don't have to spend money on them. They're going to treat you the same way, and those of you who are in favor of Obamacare, the day will come when you or members of your family, you're going to see it happen. You're going to see your lives impaired. Your lives impaired by Obamacare. You'll think back to the day when you could have got medical care. It might have, you could have, whether it was, even if it was unaffordable, you couldn't go out into the emergency room and got it. I'm going to bet you won't get it under Obamacare.
We got a quick email in, Bob in Iowa. He says there are now over 318 million people in this country. There are more than 45 million people in this country with Medicare, something like 14 million covered by SSI. Some people are actually covered for insurance by their employer, while you and I, meaning him and I, must buy ours in the open market someplace. He says it is a mess, and it is, until it collapses and it all goes, and we won't even have the choice to buy in an open market someplace.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'd rather have had the original system that existed back in the 50s that was run by the churches, because regardless of how much medical care they could provide, they at least did it in a way that appeared to be honest. The system we have right now, does anyone really think it's going to be run in an honest manner? I don't. I'm Alfred Adisk. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.